created me. I rounded her tiny blonde figure, half listening to her conversation.
Okay, Milton, just please don't tell him.
Milton sounded very much male and very much like a douchebag. The latter wasn't based solely on his affiliation with Judith, but also his name. Now I was fully invested in the conversation.
I'm really not interested in hearing what you have to say.
Pause.
Please don't make it any more difficult than it already is. Promise me you won't tell him. That's all I ask.
Pause.
Yeah, well, I have a job to go to. Bye.
She stood up. I pretended I didn't see her, pushing the door open and waltzing to the open elevator. She was a few feet behind me, so when I turned around, our eyes met. She hurried to catch my elevator. Of course, I didn't push the hold button, and sneaked in at the last second. There were two more people inside. Two assholes who went to the second floor. HR.
Hi,
she breathed, turning around to give me her back and ass. Not a bad deal. I nodded solemnly. Silence. 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 She didn't act shy or awkward. Something about this morning told me she had more pressing issues to deal with than sucking her boss's dick, and I decided on a whim that I needed to know what was on her mind. Naturally, talking to her was out of the question. She sassed way too much and always nagged me about my behavior. No. I fired a quick text message to one of my reporters, Dan, with her name and address, while the elevator made its way to the sixth floor in record negative time. Salion. Judith Humphrey, her file is with HR. I want to know everything there is to know about her, from her education to her favorite color, who she fucks, who she lives with, who she talks to. I fingered my chin, watching my message and firing off another one immediately. Salion. And how many pairs of chucks she has. Strictly speaking, it wasn't any of my business, but Judith was shaping up to be such a train wreck. Stealing from her boss, then fucking him, then avoiding him, then sucking him off, then having public fights with people on the phone outside her work building. I wanted to make sure she was on the sanity spectrum. When we got to our floor, we walked straight into the newsroom. The first rundown meeting was in 10 minutes. She walked over to her desk with that damn notebook clutched to her chest. Humphrey, join us in the conference room, I heard myself say. She perked, bit down a smile, then opened the notebook and scribbled something into it. Fast. Lord. She was so fucking thirsty for the job. I let Brianna dispose of the iPad in my palm and shoot her away. You'll be taking notes, Judith, not making suggestions, I said. I was careful to treat her exactly as I would any other reporter in her position. I was already an insufferable prick, so I wasn't particularly awful to her. But I was also fair, and after a week she'd earned the right to sit, listen, and absorb. She kept her eyes on her notebook.
A girl can dream.
Happy to fulfill your other fantasies. Good thing Brianna had started working on her cardio and was already on the other side of the floor. We were almost alone. Early, eager fuckers that we were.
I actually have one you could help me with.
Unless it involves me tying you to a bed, I'm not really interested in hearing about it, I said, setting fire to the entire conversation we'd had last week about my dancing on a red line. I sprinted through that fucker all the way to the finish line of sexual harassment. Not that I was harassing Jude, as evidenced by the enthusiasm with which she sucked my dick. But if she wanted ammo on me, I'd stupidly given her that.
It actually involved me tying you to a bed.
She batted her lashes, and for an unknown reason didn't look annoying doing so. Normally I liked being the one doing the tying, but for Humphrey I could make an exception. She stepped toward me, her tongue sweeping over her lower lip.
Then I'll strap a ball gag to your mouth.
I curved a brow, raking my eyes slowly over her body and undressing her item by item. She was high if she thought I'd put anything in my mouth that wasn't a part of her body. By the time she was in front of me, she was stark naked in my head, her voice dripping honey and sex all over my fucking loafers.
Then,
she whispered, her pillowy lips moving against my ear.
I'll set the whole damn thing on fire with you in it.
I smiled. Judith Humphrey was a massive pain in the ass. Not only was she a natural blonde, shit hot, and the owner of the best pair of lips in the tri-state area. Both pairs, if we're perfectly honest. But she was also sharp as a razor, the opposite of my usual pushover flavor of the night. If you ever had the pleasure of getting in bed with me again. I narrowed my cold eyes on hers. You would be the one to catch fire. And we both know it. With that, I curled my finger, motioning her into the conference room. People had begun to trickle straight into it with their coffee cups and sleepy eyes. Judith obeyed, her cat-like limber walk telling me she knew I was looking. James Townley opened the door for us before he walked in. "Son," he clapped my back. "Call me that again if you want a one-way ticket to early retirement," I muttered. "Junior," he winked at Judith.
"Mr. Numbers?"
she saluted. They shared a knowing smile. I punched him in the face, internally, of course. My limits were few and far between, but they were there. Besides, James had just married the morning show's latest weather girl, who was 30, both in age and IQ points, in a Hamptons ceremony that made Harry and Meghan's royal wedding look like a karaoke evening for a low-budget Jersey Shore bachelorette party. That thing got more news coverage than the North Korea threat. I shot James a don't-fuck-with-me frown, just to make sure he knew that I knew he'd checked out Judith's ass when she walked in, and he pretended not to notice me. From that point forward, it was same old, same old. My staff presented me with their ideas for tonight's show, starting with Kate beside me, my right hand, then moving to the person next to her, and so forth. Kate, 40-something, happily married and openly gay, suggested we start with the volcanic disaster in Maui. Jessica, 20-something, single and clingy as saggy balls, came up with new details about the EU crisis. And Steve, the newbie who was shaping up to be a little less useful than a bag of unwashed anuses, suggested we talk about the cheese crisis in Belgium. I braced my hands on the back of the chair I stood behind so I didn't accidentally punch him from across the table. Junior? Frankly, I did it because I didn't want James and her to have something uniquely theirs. A pet name, connection.
Me?
She pointed at herself, looking up from her abused notebook. I shot her a condescending glare and punctuated it with a raised eyebrow. She tucked her hair behind her ears and cleared her throat.
Yes, okay, good thing I have Kipling.
Kipling, who the fuck is Kipling?
So there's a YouTube blogger.
Next, I barked. This wasn't couture. I doubted our viewers wanted to hear about some chick showing people how to apply eyeliner for 20 minutes, unless she was dead and chopped into tiny pieces, spread across the five oceans.
Wait,
she bit out, her teeth grinding together.
There's a YouTube blogger with over 2 million viewers. He just posted a video telling people he hid a body part of someone close to him who passed away in the woods near his house. Whoever finds it will get 10 grand in cash.
What? Kate nearly spat her coffee all over the desk.
How did we not hear about this until now? First of all, we are the news.
Judith smiled apologetically and my jaw ticked, fighting a smirk.
And it happened literally 10 minutes ago?
She swiveled to Kate, her chest rising and falling.
Honestly, I doubt it will warrant much reaction at first. Most of his viewers are minors following his journey as a pro skateboarder, but this is definitely something we should be alarmed about. Can I?
She pointed at Steve's iPad. Steve dragged his eyes to me, a question mark and boredom shining through them. Give her the iPad, doofus. I shook my head. 5 seconds later, we were looking at Cody McHotson. Not his real name, was my wild guess. Wearing a Viking helmet, sleeveless billabong tank top, and a smug smile that flashed bleached teeth. He looked like the reason they invented guns, but he was actually doing this, sending miners out to look for a body part. It's not gross or anything. He tucked a lock of his blonde side bang back into his hat. Like, don't expect to find something super weird, but it's there. And hey, if you feel like making a buck, you should go for it. The stoner laughed into the camera, sending a plume of smoke toward the lens. Is he a minor? I turned to Judith. She shook her head.
21.
It was official. This generation was too dumb to repopulate. Hard to believe I would be dependent on his likes 50 years from now. Good lead, Humphrey. Jessica, follow it.
I'm on it.
Jessica saluted, typing away on her phone.
Hey, what about me?
Steve flung his arms in the air. You gave me a lead about Belgian cheese. Be happy my shoe is not in your ass.
Ugh,
he wailed, picking a pastry from the basket and stuffing it into his mouth. He was of the Phoenix Townley brand, a rich boy who'd wormed his way into my newsroom through connections. My father had paved the way for people who were incapable of consuming a latte without burning themselves in the process, let alone making one, yet simply had the right last name. Of course, same could be said about me. With two differences. I hadn't asked for this job, and I'd goddamn well earned it. People were leaving the conference room when I jerked my chin toward Judith. A word in private?
Here?
Yes, Einstein. The room had floor-to-ceiling glass walls, exactly what I needed to keep my hands off her. Once we were alone, I shut the door and sat down in my seat, linking my fingers together. She straightened, her chin high, watching me closely. This can't happen anymore. I motioned between us. I wanted to make sure she wasn't going to blow our dirty fucks out of proportion. The last thing I needed was for her to think we were in a relationship of sorts. I needed to keep my work area efficient and professional. She clicked her pen, nodding.
Agreed.
Anything you need help with? I gestured downstairs with my finger, but I could see by her flaring hazels that this was not the way she interpreted it. I saw you crying outside this morning. My lips flattened. This was not an invitation for a cock ride. Her cheeks pinked.
I fail to see how that is any of your business.
My employees are my business. I shot back dryly.
Their performances, yes, but you don't have to worry about that. I assure you.
Judith didn't have the tools and means to fight me. But other than that, she did a damn good job of standing up to me. I was getting tired of beating around the bush, so I just gave it to her straight. Was the phone call about us? She tilted her head back, laughing.
No, there is no us.
Quite right. Good job on the YouTuber. I stood up, ironing my shirt with my palm. This was good. I could go back to ignoring her from now on. I was about to do just that, marching over to the door, when I saw the face behind it and froze. Lily Davis stood on the other side, her glossed lips grinning at me. Lily Davis, as in the woman I should have been fucking. Lily Davis, as in the woman Humphrey knew nothing about. Lily Davis, as in my fiancé.
Jude. Some girls looked like they had the world at their Louboutin-clad feet, and the leggy brunette who burst through the glass door with a megawatt smile was one of them. Her flowery perfume made my eyes water, but maybe I was just on the verge of crying because of my exchange with my boss. She gripped Celion's collar, flashing an engagement rock the size of an entire Tiffany's store, and planted a wet kiss over his scowling lips. He held her shoulders and took a step back, giving her a frosty once-over, as if assessing the damage on a recently purchased wrecked car. Lily? Fiancé? What? It shouldn't have surprised me. Celion was gorgeous, successful, and a billionaire in his early 30s. Why wouldn't he have a fiancé who looked like sex on heels? But the irony wasn't lost on me. He had managed to put me firmly in Elise the editor's shoes. The other woman. The homewrecker. The moral-less girl. Only difference was, Elise had known for a fact that Milton had a girlfriend. I, on the other hand, had had no clue. I stood on shaky legs, waiting for Celion to introduce us. He did no such thing. Throwing Lily a cold glare, he ground out, "This is a surprise?" And not a good one, his eyes said. I had a fitting just around the block, and Mom wanted to buy macarons for Grams, so I thought I'd drop in and say hi. You know how I get stabby when there are carbs around since I started keto. Her thick eyelashes fanned against her cheeks as she clung to him, as if worried he could slip out of her hands like butter. On top of being a brunette version of Blake Lively, with a summer dress and bright yellow sandals, she looked wildly in love, undeniably so. But I wasn't going to do that to myself, be jealous of her. The poor thing had a cheating scumbag for a fiancé, and even now he looked about as remorseful as a used tissue. And you are... She circled her manicured finger around my face. The idiot your partner cheated on you with? I wanted to fall down on my knees and come clean. Tell her I'd had no clue he was taken, that he was lying, that he was a jerk. Of course, I didn't have a death wish. So I settled for a faint smile. Jude Humphrey. Jude, oh my God, love your name. So chic. I'm Lily Davis, but you know, not for long. She ran a possessive hand over Celion's muscular arm. A needle of guilt pierced my heart, my agony pouring out. Wow, congratulations. Celion stared at her like she was an alien, a perfect stranger who'd walked into his life unannounced. Sweat coated my upper lip. Oh, this little thing? She wiggled her fingers, flashing a rock that made Dwayne Johnson look miniature. We've been engaged for as long as I can remember. I finally got around to planning the wedding. She rolled her eyes, laughing. It is so exhausting. Coincidentally, So was holding my smile intact while she told me about her relationship with my boss. I decided to excuse myself before I did something that would secure me a night in jail, like slap Celion across the face several times. I'm sure you'll rise to the seemingly impossible challenge, I reddened, watching the cheater smirk in my periphery. Well, I have a lot of work to get to, so... I tilted my head to the door and found my way out. Celion stood next to Lily. They were a united front, after all, staring at me with quiet interest. Engaged. He is engaged. I was so flustered, so blind with fury, I didn't even know how I would proceed with my day without doing something stupid and irrational, like trash his entire office. I stumbled toward my station, keeping my eyes on my chucks. A hand snaked behind me, clasping my elbow and spinning me in place. I slapped it away instinctively, thinking it was Celion. It was Steve, sitting at his desk, his dull eyes zeroing in on mine. Happy with yourself, Junior? What in the fresh hell did he want from me, and did he realize how extremely poorly timed his question was? I couldn't be less happy with myself right now. Define happy, and please don't touch me again. I jerked my arm back. He stood up. Steve was a little pudgy and not very tall, but he was handsome in the way men who had all the money and time in the world could be, groomed to a T. You made me look like an idiot back there, and we both know it, he pointed at the conference room, whisper shouting. Puzzled, I cocked my head, thinking he must be giving me some kind of backhanded compliment. When his face remained thunderous, mine followed suit. I'm not following. You came with that stupid YouTube idea no one knew about. Why did you even talk at all? You're the lowest goddamn person on the totem pole. Guess that's all it takes these days. Know how to give a good BJ, get your foot in the door. My eyes flared, not that the accusation was far off the mark, but while Celia Laurent could be blamed for a lot of things, all of them scoring him brownie points in the Asshole of the Year contest, giving me perks for whatever we did or didn't do wasn't one of them. When it came to integrity, we both had it. Besides, there was no way Steve knew about the power room incident. He wanted to rile me up. Mission accomplished. Steve, you're making a pretty serious accusation here, so unless you're going to back it up with facts, I would kindly ask you to never speak to me again in a non-professional capacity. I crossed my arms across my chest. I didn't know why the universe had decided to rain calamities on me today. I just knew the day needed to end before I stabbed someone with my mechanical pen. I've got my eye on you. Steve pointed at his eyes with two fingers and poked my arm. Again. I did the only thing I could without actually putting that mechanical pen to use. I bumped my fists against each other twice, giving him the finger, friend style. Did you just... Kate pushed off her desk, her chair wheeling backward. She held her Sharpie like a cigarette in her mouth. I did. I cleared my throat. Please don't judge me. Living with the fact I did it in public is punishment enough. She shook her head, her chest vibrating with laughter. That was totally epic. In a weird, nerdy way. Good work on the YouTube piece, by the way. I'm Kate. She offered me her hand. Jude. My tight expression finally melted into a smile. Steve, let's go into Celian's office. Kate jerked her head toward the hallway, and the bastard actually had the audacity to stomp under his desk. How old was this guy? I got back to my desk and stared at the Reuters reports, chewing on my lower lip and trying not to think about Celian's fiancé. I knew I was being irrational, but I still logged into the LBC Software's Messenger app and group-messaged Grayson and Ava. For the past week, I'd been spending my lunch breaks exclusively with them. Not surprisingly, they had their noses in everyone's business. Judith, did you know Celia Laurent is engaged? Grayson, What's it to you, miss? I don't know him. Hey, look, a squirrel. Judith, it was a surprise, is all. Ava, their childhood sweethearts. Grayson, sans the sweet part. I've seen them together enough to know the man loves her as much as I love getting my crotch waxed. The results are far more aesthetically pleasing than shaving, if you're wondering. Ava, we weren't, but thanks for the mental image. Judith, Celian doesn't look like the kind of guy to do something he doesn't want to do. Grayson, let's just say it's an arranged marriage of sorts. Celian is doing it for the same reason he does everything, to get ahead in the game. Ava, her father owns Newsflash Corp. They distribute 80% of the magazines in the U.S. market. Plus, her family has 10% equity in LBC. Don't worry about Celian. No chance of him ever lifting a finger without calculating the consequences and risks. She's right. A husky voice boomed above my head, and I snapped my gaze up, my blood freezing in my veins. My knee-jerk reaction was to apologize profoundly. But then I remembered what had brought this conversation on. My browns met his blues. I tilted my chin up. I do whatever and whoever I want, and my favorite finger is the middle one. Makes for very unhappy critics, and one-night stands. How had this guy not been assassinated yet? He was a walking, talking personal offense. I kept my mouth shut. We were in a room full of colleagues. No way I could tell him what I thought of him and end the day still gainfully employed. Let's take this conversation somewhere soundproof, he ordered. Pass. I gathered some reports I'd printed out earlier and began to highlight the headlines I thought would be of interest to Jessica. Hadn't we agreed our fling was over? It was none of my business that he was a cheater, even if it made me want to staple my fist to his face for falling under his charm, twice. The sooner you realize I don't use question marks, the easier you'll adapt here. Up. He turned around, storming toward his office. I followed him because I had to. We went in just as Kate and Steve were coming out. He closed the door behind them and leaned against it, hands in his pockets. You're engaged. I narrowed my eyes into slits, giving his hard pecs a shove. He didn't move from his position against the door, just stared at me with his bone-chilling indifference. Freaking engaged, Celian! I'm sorry. Were you expecting a ring after our one night together? I hate you, I hate you, I hate you. No, but I was not expecting you to be engaged to another woman. Had I known, I never would have touched you. Just because you don't have any morals doesn't mean I don't either. Please, tell me more about your morals, miss. Still owes me a grand. His eyes traveled along my body with boredom. 1,500, actually, but that wasn't something I was eager to correct him on. I waved a hand at him. Just say what you want to say and let me get on with my day. I turned around, staring at the wall, and refused to show him my pain, which he seemed to thrive on. His posture unstiffened, and he stuck a hand into his unruly tousled curls. That being said, it is not what it looks like. My favorite cheater line, right after I can explain. I clucked my tongue, still staring at the wall behind him. Are you going to listen? His lips thinned in annoyance. Not if I can help it, I shrugged. Then I guess you can't. Lily is well aware of the fact that I'm seeing other women. We do not share a bed, a house, or even a joint gym membership. As your friends pointed out rather bluntly, my engagement is one of convenience. He dragged his long fingers over his jaw. I chose my next words carefully. You said your life is none of my business. I tend to agree with that sentiment, especially now that we're officially done with each other. So, while I appreciate you explaining yourself, I spat sarcastically, I really think this conversation is over. I made a move toward the door he was blocking. He stopped me, resting a hand on my wrist. Our eyes met, and I found his bleeding with pain. But his set jaw, high cheekbones, and smooth, regal forehead all told a story of a formidable man. My lonely heart believed his eyes. The rest of my body knew it made no difference. Chucks. Stop calling me that. Stop giving me nicknames and orgasms and hope, I internally screamed. You said you were legal savvy. Now's a good time to withdraw that hand of yours, I whispered. He did. I thought he was going to send me on my way angrily, but he didn't.
Was Steve giving you trouble?
His voice didn't sound like steel anymore, though it was nowhere near soft. Don't, I shook my head. Don't pretend you care. Don't even try to be the good guy. You're as bad as they come. And now that you came, his mouth twitched with a smile, it is time to move on. Congratulations on your engagement. She'll make a beautiful bride. Grayson.
Jude, are you still there?
Ava. Maybe he fired her.
Grayson. Maybe he kidnapped her.
Ava.
Stockholm fantasies much?
Grayson. The guy does look like Theo James' beefed baller macho brother. Him not knowing my name aside, I would let him show me a good time even if I ended up in his trunk at the end of the night.
Ava.
You need professional help, Gray. I'm not equipped to deal with your type of crazy. Grayson.
It would be a spacious trunk, too, I bet.
Celion.
If you two were to read anything more substantial than the National Enquirer, such as our company's newsletter from 3 months ago, you would know that messenger chats on our web software are now publicly available to view by any user in the company.
Grayson left the chat room. Ava left the chat room. Judith sent a gif of Ross from Friends bumping his fists together.
Chapter 5. Celion. If there was one thing I'd learned from producing news for over a decade, it was that wars are not measured in words or declarations or assumptions. They are defined by results, the number of casualties and land conquered. The colder they are, the longer they last. I made my way back from picking up my own dry cleaning once again on a spring afternoon because Miss Humphrey, my assistant's assistant, who'd blackmailed me into the task with a blowjob more than a week ago, was adamant I didn't deserve her help. She had won the first battle. Currently, Judith was avoiding me. I was avoiding Lily, and my father was loitering around my newsroom, sending Jude looks that made my skin crawl so violently I was tempted to shed it completely and dump it on my office floor. I thought things could not get any worse, but I'd obviously underestimated the clusterfuck called my life, because sure enough, Dan, the reporter I'd tasked with getting info about Jude, stood at my office threshold when I returned. Are you ready for this? I was somewhat surprised to learn he'd spent the last week actually working on this and not drinking his body weight with the advance I transferred into his account. I waved for him to close the door and take a seat. Drop the game show mannerism, I'm not a 60s housewife. So, Judith Humphrey is neck deep in shit and currently trying to swim her way out against the stream. Mother died when she was 13, Dad diagnosed with cancer about a year ago. He rubbed his fingers across his lips, delivering the news dryly while settling into the chair opposite to mine. When your girl found out about her pop, she quit her prestigious yet underpaid internship and took 2 temp jobs to help with the bills, but obviously her income still couldn't cover a mortgage in New fucking York, not to mention the everyday life of a property owner in Brooklyn. Her dad recently stopped going to chemotherapy because they can't afford it. Their bills are unpaid, their fridge is mostly empty, and they live in Bed-Stuy. If I'd had a heart, it would have slowed almost to a halt. But as it happened, I didn't, so all I could manage was despising her a little less for the wallet stunt. My face remained placid, so Dan took it as a cue to continue. She had a boyfriend, but he seems to be out of the picture. The day you two disappeared into the Laurent Towers Hotel together, and don't give me any details because I sure as hell don't want to know, was the last time she was seen at his apartment building, according to the CCTV footage. Your girl is unaware of the fact that said boyfriend, Milton, purchased an engagement ring that he is still keeping in his nightstand drawer. But based on the active ghosting she's doing every time he calls, it's safe to say a comeback is not in their cards. By the way, did I use the term ghosting correctly? I felt my nostrils flaring, and I wasn't entirely sure what pissed me off more. The fact that Dan was trying to act younger than 85, or that Jude could have fucked her boyfriend on the same evening I'd had my dick inside her. Continue. As far as her hobbies go, Judith likes reading thrillers while sitting on her porch on Saturday mornings, and she prefers Costa over Starbucks and bagels over tacos. On Sundays, she goes to the New York Public Library and reads everything from Newsweek to the New York Times. She skips the Post every single time, never touches the gossip columns, and munches on Sour Patch Kids when no one is watching. She shudders when people dog-ear books, and always stops to listen to buskers. Sometimes she throws money into their instrument cases. She prepares an extra sandwich every morning and gives it to the homeless guy living outside the train station near her house. He paused, letting out a belch. Put simply, Jude Humphrey is barely existing at this point money-wise. Even so, she seems to be in good spirits, so if you're worried about her stealing from her workplace or becoming a double agent for another broadcasting company, I would say it's pretty unlikely. I was hardly concerned about Jude's loyalty, but I couldn't tell Dan I'd had him check on her because my dick and I shared an unhealthy obsession with the girl. How much is my father paying you here, Dan? I stroked my chin, changing the subject. His gaze shot up from his phone. $120K? Why? I'll pay you $150 to work for me exclusively.
Okay.
The leathery-skinned 50-something man smiled at that. Dan hit the bottle 3 times a week, and we couldn't rely on him to chase news around New York without making a pit stop at every bar, but he sure was good enough for digging up dirt. I want you to keep an eye on this Milton kid, the boyfriend. Got it. He wrote something in his notepad. Dan was severely old school, with his tattered courier bag, tape recorder, thinning amber hair, and hate for everything with a flat screen. Also, find out who Kipling is, but most importantly, I need you to follow my father. I didn't miss a beat watching said creeper through the glass wall as he approached Judith. She looked up and pushed off her desk, standing. Her puzzled eyes studied him intently, but otherwise her mouth was curved in a polite smile. My father motioned upstairs, probably to his office. My fist clenched and my jaw tensed so hard I thought my teeth were going to turn to dust. Dan's head shot up.
What are we looking to find?
Everything and anything that could take him down. Before Dan could nod, I smoothed my tie and pressed the switchboard button connecting me to Brianna. Get me a discreet meeting with Mr. Humphrey.
Sir, as in Judith Humphrey's father?
No, as in Humphrey Bogart. He died sometime in the 50s. I'm sure he's not a hard man to track. Silence from the other end. Yes, Brianna, Judith Humphrey's father, and make sure this doesn't get back to her in any way.
Yes, sir.
More silence. Then.
Sir?
What?
Thank you for doing your own dry cleaning. I really appreciate it.
She needed to thank Judith, but of course I would never admit that. It felt like waving a white flag, and all I could see was red. All I could feel was history repeating itself, with my father trying to seduce Judith and her dress ending up in a puddle, like water on the floor of the electrical closet. Catastrophic. I put the receiver down, waving Dan away like he was a waiter who'd messed up my order. His chin jiggled along with his stomach on a chuckle. When you least expect it, eh? I would have asked what he meant, had I cared. Out, I said instead. 16, by the way. He pushed himself up, groaning. Huh? You asked me how many pairs of chucks she has. I counted. At least 16. That's a lot of fucking moods for one tiny thing. Shortly after sending Dan on his way, I waltzed out of my office and into the newsroom. Grilling Jude about my dad was tempting, but I wasn't a hypocrite and she didn't owe me shit. Besides, it was likely she already felt extra salty after what had happened with Lily, and she had enough on her plate without having my dirty laundry to sort through. I was going to talk to Kate about an item I wanted to scrap from the show tonight, when Steve blocked my way to her desk, throwing his body between us like a hysterical mother in front of a speeding car. Big. Fucking mistake, dude bro. Can I help you? I raised an eyebrow. I have something you really want to see, Celion. Please call me Mr. Laurent. Only my friends call me Celion. Chances are I'll stab myself in the eye with a fork before initiating a conversation with you about non-professional issues. Start talking. I followed him to his desk and he pointed at his screen, his smile oozing stupidity in a way I didn't know was physically possible. Look. To me, it looked like a picture of a random middle-aged chick trying to sit on a cucumber. Are you sharing your porn stash with me, Steve, because A, my taste is a little more conservative, and B, it is strictly forbidden to access erotic websites in this building. She's the vice president of Together Forever, a non-profit organization for people with ADHD. Got caught doing this salacious act at her bachelorette party. Steve cackled, his smug smile screaming, jackpot. Here's the part where you tell me why I should care. I began to sort through emails on my phone, losing patience.
Because, look what she's doing!
He cried out, pointing at his screen.
She's legit trying to fit a cucumber into her vag.
I turned around and walked away. This wasn't an item. It wouldn't even be an item if she was a legitimate celebrity. That was Gary and Ava's jurisdiction. But it highlighted the fact that right now Steve was using a lot of space, resources, and oxygen that should have been offered to someone more capable than him. Kate was already standing up when I approached, her flame-red bob appearing sharper than usual. He's impossible. She pretended to puff on her pen. Ever since she'd stopped smoking, she did that with everything from Sharpies to asparagus stalks. My dog can do a better job than him. I braced my hands over her desk. And I don't even have one. A word?
Oh no, smells like a canned item in the making.
Kate and I walked to the conference room, and I shot a look at Judith to see if she'd followed us with her eyes the way I followed her everywhere she went in the office. She was typing away, looking at her monitor. Kate caught my ogling and smirked. I rarely spared my employees a look. Her eyes joined mine on Jude. Did I fuck up by not giving Jude a heads up about my situation? Yes. But did I think my one-night stand was going to end up being my employee? Hell no.
She is pretty.
Kate leaned her head over my shoulder. I shrugged. Arguing with that would imply that I'm blind, which I'm not.
She's also kind, smart, and funny. A natural in the newsroom.
Get to the point sometime this calendar year, please.
You've got it hard for her, Celion.
Kate ran a hand over my shirt, and I had to clear my throat because this was wrong on so many levels I couldn't even begin to count them. My job was to expose unethical behavior and bring factual news to the table. I wasn't going to piss all over it for a girl with feline eyes and hair like yellow autumn leaves. Not to mention, to most people in the world, I was an engaged man. But not to Kate. She knew my story. All of it. Which was why she refused to speak to my father under any circumstances. Can't do anything about it. I tapped away on the table I leaned against.
You can if it's consensual. People fall in love at their workplace all the time. It's not against the law.
I'm her boss. Also the devil spawn of the owner.
An owner who is actively trying to get into her pants.
Kate raised a finger, pointing it out. Precisely. Besides, I rubbed my face. Lily.
Break up with her. Call off the engagement. And don't give me the newsflash corp bullshit. It's about time.
Like hell I will. My father would have a fucking field day if I give up the only leverage I have on him. Ever since my baby sister died, I'd become even more career-driven. My eyes were on the prize and had never shifted until Judith walked into this building. Lily Davis had an influential father and her siblings had both given up on their family business. Lily was going to inherit Newsflash Corp, and her family was a shareholder at LBC with as much as 10%. So joining their family meant I could overthrow every decision my father had made if I combined their shares with my mother's. The merger between LBC and Newsflash Corp was going to make me one of the biggest tycoons in the world once my father stepped down, which was why he'd done what he did and ruined what little promise I had left going on in my life.
Irrelevant. Your father is a douche, and his feelings toward what you do, or lack thereof, should not determine your choices.
I hated that Kate was the voice of reason. I also hated that she was pretty much the only friend I had who I was certain wouldn't stab me in the back the minute I turned around. I was short on friends, seeing as I trusted no one, including my fucking coffee machine.
As for your world domination aspirations...
She raised her hand to pat my cheek, clucking her tongue.
Grow up, Celion. What's the point of being powerful if you're miserable?
I changed the subject, because none of it mattered. I wasn't throwing away my plans, nor my idiotic fiancé. Judith was... Judith. Undoubtedly beautiful, not in the way women in magazines were, but in a way that makes you want to mark her with your teeth, tongue, and piss if need be. Hardworking and smart. There was a chance, albeit a small one, that if I broke things off with Lily and told Judith the entire story, she would still be willing to give the enemies with benefits thing a chance. And Kate was right. A consensual affair in a workplace wasn't unheard of. But we weren't going to be lovers. We were going to be two people fucking each other into submission, and a fuck, no matter how good, wasn't worth my entire future. I fell to my seat, noticing that Steve was throwing a fit and yelling at Jessica in the middle of the newsroom. Jude hurried over to them, took Jessica's hand and led her away. We're canning the flammable cell phone item, I told Kate distractedly. She punched the desk between us, then noiselessly yelled at the pane.
I knew you'd do that.
Get everyone in the conference room now. 5 minutes later, everyone was inside, including a solemn Jessica and a defiant Judith. Kate was outside on a quick phone call. We need a new item to close up the show. At this point, I'll take anything, a feature, a kicker, a piece about anything that's not completely stupid. Brainstorm away. I tapped my finger over the Chrome conference table. Everybody looked at their digital devices, typing text messages to their sources and generally being productive. Steve, however, sat with his arms crossed and sulked like a toddler in the midst of a tantrum. Got it. A pop star with an American passport was just murdered in a strip club in Korea. Kate swung the door open and walked into the fishbowl meeting room, still staring at her phone. Steve, I know you like good gossip. Can you follow that up? Kate was already texting her source.
Sure, north or south.
He scratched his head with the tip of his pen. The silence that followed his question almost made my ears bleed. He thought there were strip clubs in North Korea? That was it. I was done. Out of my newsroom, now. But another word and you won't be working anywhere on this street for the rest of your life. Manhattan. Mr. Laurent, you've just been blacklisted in the entire city of New York.
Please!
Correction. State.
I didn't...
Steve darted up from his chair with his arms stretched wide, looking left and right for support. Unfortunately for him, he'd managed to piss off my entire staff in the 2 months he'd been here. Steve, you are on the verge of metaphorical deportation. What's not to understand? Get the hell out. Humphrey, you're replacing him as a slightly less junior reporter starting 2 minutes ago, and since Jessica is hard on the Wall Street item, you're taking over the pop star coverage. The only thing I had in mind was to get someone with a functioning brain to write me the report, and fast, because all my reporters were drowning in work, and Steve obviously couldn't scratch his own head without cutting it off. I didn't favor her in any way because I wanted to get into her pants. I also knew she would die before getting ahead in the game by giving head. Steve growled, throwing his hands in the air and stalking out of the conference room. He collected his crap from his station and dumped his employee card in the trash can by the door, which was technically against the company rules, but didn't put a damper on the fact I'd finally gotten rid of him.
Me?
Jude looked up, her green-brown golden irises dilating. It was excitement, I think, and it made me so fucking hard I was surprised I didn't tilt up my side of the table. Jessica will help you with whatever you need. Jessica nodded, squeezing Judith's hand.
Of course. I'm here for you, Jojo.
Jojo shot up from her seat.
I will not let you down, sir.
I know, and hell if that doesn't make me harder than an oak tree. I was so used to people fucking up that having someone constantly step up their game was a disappointment in itself. She was the kind of good I'd only seen one person exhibit proudly, and that was Camille. Fuck, where did that come from? Back to work, everyone. I collected my things and opened the glass door, motioning for people to leave. I expected Judith to do what they all did when I promoted them. Stop, thank me, melt into a puddle at my feet. Alas, Miss Humphrey merely passed me on her way back to her station, not sparing me so much as a glance. In a moment of madness, I decided to go the stupid route and touched her back ever so briefly. She turned around, cocking an eyebrow. Tomorrow, lunch. The room was empty, so why did it feel like I was suggesting I ravage her on James Townley's desk during prime time, tinting her ass red with my open palm?
I'll be busy,
she said flatly. This will be a professional meeting regarding your new position. Probably should have started with that, idiot.
And I will still be busy. Whatever you need from me, I am happy to talk about it right here in the office. Now I have an assignment to do. Will that be all, sir?
I let her walk away, briefly wondering when the tables had turned. She'd started as a nameless dirty fuck and had somehow dug her way out of that compromising position. The girl who'd stolen from me was now getting a promotion, getting me to do my own dry cleaning and sassing back. Yeah, I don't think so. Jude grabbed her phone and started dialing, already flipping her recorder on and connecting it to her cell.
Hello, my name is Jude Humphrey, and I'm a reporter at LBC's Daily News Night. I'm calling about the unfortunate and untimely death of Sungmin Che.
I looked down and I was still hard. I think I'd changed my mind about Chucks after all. She deserved a few more fucks before I stopped giving any about her.
Chapter 6 Jude. Go shorty. It's your item. We're gonna party like it's your item, and you know we don't give a fuck it's actually Kate's item. Grayson was twerking on his stool by the bar, sipping his Bacardi, and generally acting like a cheerleader in a horror flick mere seconds before she gets chopped into lamb kebabs. Ava knocked back her third martini, fluffing her thick black curls and staring at me from behind the rim of her empty glass. They were both celebrating my first real journalistic accomplishment, even when I'd pointed out that someone had died and maybe we should hold off the celebrations. They weren't convinced. That pop star tried to rape a chick, Gray pointed out. We are allowed to celebrate. Sure you don't want anything to eat? Ava quirked a brow. You look a little pale. We were at Le Cocktail across the street from the office. I was dying for that roast beef sandwich. In reality, I was drinking a glass of tap water and faking a headache, because I couldn't afford anything more, and maybe it was my poor girl's pride, but I couldn't stomach anything Ava and Gray were going to pay for, even though I knew they'd be delighted to treat me after I'd successfully fulfilled my first assignment. Seeing as I'd kept Mom about my situation with my dad and my debt, they both bought into my migraines excuse. Watching them get drunk and talk about their weekend plans, all of them involving spending money, sent jealousy nibbling at the corners of my gut. I want Grayson to stop singing 50 Cent. Can you make that happen? I took a small drink of my water. Unfortunately, no. Ava shook her head. But I can tell you he's one drink away from passing out, so the singing will be over soon. Are you coming with us to the Met tomorrow? We're going to check out the Indonesian restaurant they wrote about in Time Out afterwards. I wish I could, but I'm probably going to help my father crawl into the shower, then argue with service providers on the phone to try to get them to give me more time to pay. Got plans with my dad. Maybe next time. Jesus had probably kept good on his word to keep God updated about all of my sins, because of all the songs in the world, Promiscuous by Nelly Furtado and Timbaland blasted through the room. The place was bustling, and the scent of stale tap beer, deep-fried everything, and urban stench clung to our clothes. Grayson was hiccuping and talking at the same time, and I tuned him out to people watch until he said, "Oops, Juju Ross is there." "What?" I shouted over the music. "Your boss is here," he yelled into my ear, "and he is looking 50 shades of great." Grayson, I discovered, had the tendency to be cheesier than a Taco Bell enchilada when he was drunk. "Where?" Ava looked around. "Three stools down." I craned my neck, my face heating before I'd even spotted his broad back, still clad in the ink-black textured wool Yves Saint Laurent jacket he'd had on in the office. There was nothing saint-like about what this Laurent was doing, though. Even with his back to me, I could see the woman he was talking to clearly. She ran a pale pink clawed finger down her neck, giggling like a schoolgirl, and purred at something he had said. Celion must have been in top form, because whatever came out of his mouth next caused her to have to right herself by clinging to his shoulders, she laughed so hard. They shared a quick, intimate hug, and I was a witch, burning at the stake from the inside, wanting to break free from whatever spell he'd put over me that made me feel so completely and unbelievably miserable. Beautiful. She was beautiful, with hair a shade darker than his, sapphire blue eyes and a sun-kissed tan. Celion obviously had a type, and it wasn't a dirty blonde hazel-eyed woman who dressed like a headmistress in a British movie from the 50s, except with chucks. Purple today, by the way, dignity and pride. But I had a feeling I was about to lose both. "Earth to Jude," Grayson slurred, elbowing me in the chest. "Ouch," I shot him a dirty look. "Yeah? Is it just me, or does it look like he's flirting with another woman?" "I don't care," I jutted my chin out. "Yeah, we didn't think you would, but his fiance might." Ava blinked, staring at me like I was a weirdo. Which I was. Of course they'd meant Lily and not me. Suddenly I felt very tired and very hungry, like the air was dense with misery, soaked with toxins. Every breath was lethal. I grabbed Gray's Bacardi and tossed it back in one gulp, then slammed it against the bar. "My headache is getting out of control. I'm going to the restroom to wash my face and pop some Advils. Be right back. I wobbled my way on a path to the ladies' room, which took me by Celion and the mystery brunette. Once I was close enough to them, I slowed my pace, hearing them speak in French. The words rolled off of their tongues, and my vindictive heart nearly burst into flames. Here he was, pulling the same old trick he'd used on me while his fiancée was sitting at home making plans, dreaming about their future. Fake or not, he was still in a relationship. Parading with women in bars was in bad taste. Since I didn't actually need to pee, I settled for pacing in the bathroom, stewing in my own anger. Did I need my job? Yes. Was I excited to be working in a newsroom? More than anything else in the world. I still hadn't told my college friends, but I knew they were going to go crazy when they heard the job I'd snagged at LBC. None of that mattered right now, though, and maybe it was the Bacardi I'd gulped on an empty stomach, but confronting him seemed like a terribly good idea. Emphasis on the word, terribly. I darted out of the bathroom and pushed through the crowd. Once I got to Celion, I tapped his shoulder. He turned around in slow motion, his smug smile undeterred, even when he saw my face, charred with agony. The woman next to him shot me an interested look, but didn't say a word, cradling her glass of white wine.
"Humphrey," he said.
"Laurent," I quipped, feeling bold. "Does she know?"
"Know what?"
His lips broadened into an even wider grin, but that meant nothing. Celion was always nonchalant. A meteor could be speeding toward Earth at the speed of light, crashing and killing all of us in exactly 2 hours, and he still wouldn't skip the foreplay when he took this girl to his presidential suite for their sexcapade. Any of the following things, really. One, I jerked my thumb up, that it's your thing. You pretend to be a French tourist and take women to a hotel suite for the night, even though you're American, born and bred. Two, I pointed my forefinger at him, that you have a fiancé waiting back home. And three, I gave him the middle finger, narrowing my eyes as I tried to come up with something. There was a three, I was certain of it. Unfortunately, I'd forgotten what it was. He stared at me expectantly, his smile threatening to slice his face in half. I never realized he was so devastatingly dashing and boyish. His smile felt like a deep, lazy kiss under a perfect sunset. Three doesn't matter right now, I amended. Does she know those other things? He turned to his companion and stroked his chin, looking thoughtful.
Do you know all those things, cuz?
Cuz? She offered me her hand, and I shook it, my mouth agape. I'm Emilie, Celion's cousin. I study fashion here in New York, first year. Celion is helping me, what's the word, she said in her ridiculously enchanting accent. Settle in. She squeezed his forearm, and I saw it in the way they looked at each other. Family. I began to look for a rock under which I could hide for the next decade. I pretended to gravely consider this new information while stroking my chin. Yes, Celion is definitely good at settling. Someone shut me up. Anyone, please. Bartender? I was ripping into his relationship and playing Russian roulette with my job.
You're too kind.
He ran a seemingly friendly hand along the back of my arm, his rough palm sending waves of lust to my lower belly, dampening my panties.
Humphrey, in contrast, excels at looting.
His tongue moved across his upper teeth like the bad wolf he was.
Practically stealing all the dirty headlines from our competitors.
I took a cautious step back. Why did I have to be so impulsive? Why had I assumed the role of his fiancé's keeper? I had a sick father to take care of at home. Luckily, Celion didn't look even half offended by my antics. I wondered if it was because I'd slayed the South Korean pop star assignment. His attitude toward people did seem to stem directly from their performance in his newsroom. I think I'm going to go. I swallowed.
Good thinking. You should do it more often.
He reached for his whiskey casually.
Enjoy your night, Chucks.
You too, Mr. Laurent. Boss. Sir. I wish I hadn't been standing on my feet. Shoving one of them into my mouth seems like a great way to put a lid on this conversation. I made my way back to Ava and Grayson. Luckily, they hadn't noticed the Celion debacle. They were too busy arguing about the merits of saffron lollipops as a weight loss method. They were so engrossed in the subject, they didn't even notice when the bartender slid me a plate with a roast beef sandwich, a bottle of whiskey, and three glasses. He leaned down.
"From the gentleman three seats to your left, he said to tell you that you should eat your meat."
My heart cartwheeled, finishing its flip with an Olympic bow. It's okay. I can't fall in love. Mom said so herself. What I'm feeling right now is a mixture of nausea, heartbreak from Milton, and guilt over what happened with an engaged man. The Bacardi certainly didn't help either. I didn't know if I should be mad, flattered, or crushed by his gesture, but I was starving, desperate for a drink, and dizzy from low blood sugar. I was also oddly relieved to know Celion was going home alone tonight. I didn't want to be a charity case. But Celion wasn't privy to how bad things were at my home. He had no way of knowing how dire the situation in my bank account was. My decision was made when the smell of pan-seared roast beef crept into my nostrils. I tore into it like a wild animal. Ava and Grayson stopped the chatter and stared at me.
"Did you just order a bottle of whiskey that's worth $200?
Grayson slurred, launching into a fit of hysterical laughter. Ava was busy cracking it open and pouring each of us a generous glass.
I'm celebrating getting over my migraine, I mumbled around a hot piece of roast beef and the lettuce in my mouth. Not the untimely death of a pop star.
God bless Advil, right? And handsome bosses. Ava swiped her eyes along my chest like she could see the thing inside of it stumbling all over the place, drunk as she was. The way her lips curved knowingly made me wonder if she had caught some of my exchange with Celion.
I'm just glad the headache is gone. I filled my mouth with more food. Talking wasn't doing me much good at this point.
Your boss is about to be gone next. She drank in my reaction, and I gave it to her, my curiosity getting the better of me. I tilted my head to the side, catching Celion helping Emily into her jacket as they made their way to the door.
Seems so.
I picked a cherry tomato from my plate and popped it into my mouth. I sneaked one last glance at him, even though it was wrong, even though he wasn't mine to look at. Celion ushered his cousin into an Uber, kissed her forehead, and tapped the roof in goodbye. Then, as if my gaze was an invitation, as if he could feel it on his back, he turned around and stared directly at me from the bar's window. Our eyes locked, and everything stopped. I'm not for the taking, my eyes said.
That's for me to decide, his hissed.
You still want to tell us there's nothing going on between you and Boss Man?
Grayson taunted from the periphery, his voice crawling into me, rattling something I was trying hard to keep dormant. I opened my mouth, ready to defend myself, but the lie wouldn't come out. Sundays were library days. Days of echoed silence and old ink and yellow paper, of munching on sweets and stealing glances at eager young students, reading and writing away their future one word at a time. Today, Dad had practically pushed me out the door. He'd made some excuse about me getting some vitamin D, but it wasn't even that sunny. Nonetheless, I figured he wanted time alone. The apartment was small. Besides, getting some me time to think wasn't the worst idea I'd had. I also needed to read more about the Sudanese crisis. I'd felt a little unequipped and uninformed this week when we'd discussed it in one of our rundown meetings. Celion shot facts from his sleeve at a speed I could barely register. Not only did he have the general knowledge of Google, but he delivered it with the charisma and finesse of Winston Churchill. I'd wanted to curl up like a kitten under his desk at that moment and listen to him talk all day. That sounded degrading, even in my head, but it didn't make it any less true. Hell, at night, when I turned off the light and looked out my window, I imagined myself sucking him off as he wrote the latest newscast. The man's mind was even sexier than his looks. He was an amazing sight to behold, in and out of the newsroom.
It'll be a long time before you stop thinking about my cock every time you masturbate at the end of a long workday under your cheap covers.
God, I hated him. And he was 3-carat engaged. I settled into a chair and chewed into a retro foam mix of Sunnyside